Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Huntworth. Huntworth bringing you quality hunting clothing and packs at a price you deserve. Check them out at huntworthgear.com. So we just did our giveaway for the quarter. That's posted up on Instagram. So a lot of the winners I've reached out to, but there are some that I'm still getting all the stuff worked out. So there's a few of them. Still need to reach out to. So if you are a Patreon and you haven't seen that yet, go check it out. See if you won. Had my daughter draw them all for you. So it was fun. Good talk. Talked a little bit about the Patreon hunt. Working on that draft. Going to get that out probably tonight. I think I'm going to get that taken care of for you. And we're going to start working on that. Get up to our get a date for the Zoom meeting so we can figure out who's coming, what we're staying in, all that stuff. Really excited and hope to see you know, just as many people as we did last year, and maybe put another racked buck on the ground. That's my goal for this year, is gonna be two racked bucks in camp. So five deer last year, one racked buck. And hoping for doubling that success and just as many laughs, smiles, all that stuff. But welcome back to a couple of different Patreons, TJ Recipco and Blake Bettendorf. A little hiatus, but I think maybe with the season coming up, people are starting to pop back in. Tyler came back to the Patreon Marco Polo group, and that community is still rolling. So thanks to all you guys for that, for the support. This quarter, you know, more quarterly giveaways from our friends at Huntworth, Latitude, Kanati Arrow, Zinger Fletchings, Lucky Buck, Vitalize Seed, Genesis 3D, Big Shot Targets, Spartan Forge. Can't thank them enough for letting us do this stuff. You know, Latitude, Genesis 3D, Zinger, Kanati, those guys are all going to be at the Mobile Hunting Expo, so definitely stop by. Spartan Forge as well, they're actually sponsoring the Mobile Hunting Expo, so stop by, tell those guys thank you for supporting our show. You know, we really appreciate it, and if you buy anything from them, let them know certainly that that you heard it here. So really appreciate it. This episode, man, it goes back to TAC, where I ran into David Riley sitting around drinking beer and walked in on a conversation. And this is kind of like a continuation of that. But as always, because of where we're at right now, it gets into deer scouting, deer tactics, all of that from your first deer perspective all the way to locating gear that, locating deer that people say don't exist in Michigan. So super fun episode, super educational, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it. If you get a chance, check out our Patreon page, you know, Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. Just click on the the Patreon link or patreon.com/bowhunterchroniclespodcast if you want to be part of the Patreon hunt, any of that stuff. And we do have another hunt in the works. It seems like forever away, but it's coming up quickly. We're doing that spring bear hunt out in Montana with Tom, so really looking forward to all of that. You can check that out, like I said, at the website. But if not, just tell somebody about the episode. Tell somebody about the podcast. I know you guys are going to enjoy this one. Thanks again. Enjoy the episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. And one of these deals where I got another podcast host, podcast co-host, David Riley, on the podcast. And we were up at TAC. I think I met him in person last year at TAC and had some great conversations with him. And this year, I happened to walk into a conversation he was having with Greg Litzinger about hunting and goals and like just feeling happy or excited the way you were when you were a kid. And he's like, I wish I could have that again. And I'm like, well, why can't you? And we didn't really get to finish the conversation. So I was like, well, we need to come on here and do that. And I do want to talk some summer scouting and stuff like that, because I think David is a very high level, like kind of like goal oriented hunter. And you can listen to any of their podcasts and you can tell that really quickly. But I think for a lot of guys, and I think it's for me, it's taken like this 5 years of doing the podcast. This is the first year of talking to all of these guys that I actually realized like what I was doing wrong. And it's a whole nother game. Like if you've listened to this podcast or any hunting podcast, say for the last 2, 3, 4 years, or you've dove into the content like we have, you have the tools and maybe you know how to implement them, but I think it's the mindset. I think it is having that, what I called, I think on the last podcast, was obsession, like flipping that switch and saying, okay, I need to stop doing what I was doing. I need to put in this type of effort at this time, whether that's the rut, whether that's the early season, whether that's the late season, instead of just going and doing the same things that you've been doing and then trying to implement the things that David says, the things that Dan says, the things that Greg or Jake Bush say. And I think that that's something that I want to dive into as well. But so how are you doing today, David?
Man, I'm doing good. You know, we're sitting here tonight. Now we're going to talk a lot about whitetail hunting and whitetail hunting here in Michigan, probably particular, but we're just coming off a weekend. It's the middle of, you know, July here. So as much of us whitetail addicts as we are, you know, velvet season is in full swing. You know, the cameras are out. We're out driving the roads a lot right now. So I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me on. How are you doing tonight, buddy?
Not bad. You know, I don't got to work tomorrow, so it's just another day. My life, it's you know, it's a little hectic, but it gets easier every week, I think. So not a big deal. So for you, what is your backstory? Like, so when did you start hunting, and who introduced you to hunting, and what was that style of hunting like?
Man, that's a great question, and we will rewind it all the way back to when I was a very young age. You know, I come from that story of growing up around hunting, a heavy hunting heritage, basically. I can remember back, you know, being 8, probably maybe even as young as 6 years old, 8 years old, shooting a bow back then. And my grandpa's probably the number one influence that has brought me into hunting today. And then second to that was probably my uncle. And I look back, you know, we're the same age. So when we were growing up, you had to be 12 to bow hunt and you had to be 14 to gun hunt. But I can remember looking back now, I can remember being 8, 9, 10 years old. And basically my grandpa putting me through somewhat of his own hunter safety course. Like, he was teaching me everything that I needed to know back then. And I can remember going hunting with them. In the days I didn't go hunting, say if I was in school and it was after time change, I can remember this. So time change, so that meant that means it gets dark earlier. I can remember coming home from school and remembering that Grandpa was already out hunting. And I would watch from the window for the lights to come back up. And I know how many arrows my grandpa would take hunting. And as soon as he'd walk through the door, I'd count them to see if he had shot anything or if they were red. I can remember those days. So he was such a heavy influence at a young age. Well, whether it's right or wrong, when I became 10 years old, I can remember, you know, going out during gun season with my grandpa. And back then, you couldn't even hunt from an elevated stand with a gun. But I can remember Grandpa being like, you know, well, if I may fall asleep, David, and if I fall asleep and if you see a deer, go ahead and shoot it, you know. And he had taught me everything I needed to know about hunter safety, being safe with that weapon. I mean, I was shooting a compound. I was shooting leagues before 10 years old, basically. And he got me hooked back at 10 years old. And back then it was a buck, you know. And then by 12 years old, I was taking hunter safety between 10 and 12. And by 12 years old, I was archery hunting on my own. Like I can remember them dropping me off in homemade treated, you know, 2x4 tree stands with a melt crate for a seat. And I look back at those days, there was no safety harness on those things, but we were hunting. And I was actually thinking about this a while back, that we cleaned out the storage room in the basement, and I was going through these totes of deer racks, and every deer rack I have, we always write the date on it. My grandma used to have the old Polaroid cameras that had like the white strip on the bottom, and she'd write my name and the date in the year I killed that animal. And from when I was 12 years old to about 26, you know, so you're talking, you know, 14-ish years, I almost killed 2 bucks every year during this time. You know, my grandpa taught me how to hunt. He taught me how to kill animals. Now, not particularly the mature bucks in our area, but he taught me how to hunt. You know, and I killed a lot of deer. I went on a lot of track jobs. Still to this day, I'm a terrible tracker. I have that red-green colorblind. I am a terrible tracker, you know. Like I joke around, I say that's why I have kids now, so they can track, you know. But I lived for it. I lived for when my grandpa, my uncle shot one, or the neighbor shot one, and we'd go tracking. Like I lived for going out there and putting up tree stands right before season. Like I loved all of that back then, and there's a lot of things like they made my grandparents made hunting season very important to me. On weekends, they'd go and buy like donuts on Saturday and Sundays. And I can remember hunting in the mornings as a kid, and I couldn't get up to the house fast enough mid morning because I knew there'd be a baker's dozen donuts sitting up there waiting, you know. So that's kind of my backstory of how I got into hunting. You know, I was very fortunate to grow up around that stuff, you know, rabbit hunting, squirrel hunting, hell, I can even remember as a kid, my uncle and I raising quail from like an incubator, like the eggs, you know, inside of a house, and building cages for them and releasing them because they taught me how important it was to give back to the land that we used. I grew up around this stuff, man. It was never about hunting big deer, though. That was never the case, you know, always. It was always fun when we shot something with, you know, more points. But we lived in a good area of Michigan where, like, you know, we've seen a lot of deer. Very fortunate enough to kill a lot of deer. So, you know, basically from the age of 12 to, you know, 26, man, I just hunted. I hunted and I filled a lot of tags. And we had a lot of fun doing that.
So what was the style of hunting? You know, so now we're all these mobile hunting, public land, all this stuff. And, you know, there's, you know, some would say some animosity between public land guys and public guys. And then there's also some mystique for some of these guys that hunted private and they want to go, you know, try their hand at public. And honestly, I don't, I mean, I understand that hunting is hunting and it's all the same, but I think personally that there's a difference in the mindset. And I think that there are some public land hunters that think public land is, you know, that's their spot and they go to the same spot every year. And especially, I would say more so for gun hunters. But I think that that's been my experience growing up is that, you know, dad goes here, Uncle Barry goes here, you know, grandpa goes for a walk, Greg goes here, and that's your spot. And so we don't think about the wind. We don't think about any of the stuff. We just throw our guys out there and you go to that spot every year because it's good, not necessarily, or because it was good last year, it was good 10 years ago. So what was your style of hunting and has it evolved or changed over the years?
Man, it's definitely changed. I mean, it's changed hard, big time. But, you know, when I was a kid...
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience. Brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts. Every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.
I look back and I can remember we had like a handful of tree stands. And then we had a handful of ground blinds. Because like I said, when we were kids, there was no gun hunting out of a tree. Like that wasn't even legal. So we always had these like places that we would gun hunt, and they were always on the ground. But I look back at those places and it's like those gun blind spots were always the thickest places, because I can remember like my grandpa would brush hog swamps, like shooting lanes into the swamps right before gun season. But when it came to bow hunting, man, I was bow hunting from October 1st. On right off the bat, I was shooting the first two bucks I could come across, you know, and it always had to be, you know, my second buck tag had to be four more on one side. And when I first started bow hunting, you know, you're talking back in, you know, basically 1997, kind of like shooting does wasn't a really popular thing back then. And I think even if I remember right, like getting those doe tags was tough to even get. So, you know, shooting the first two bucks was always very important to me. You know, like it didn't really matter what kind of bucks I shot as long as the one had four or more on one side. But the style of hunting, honestly, was, you know, we probably had 3 to 5 tree stands and I would just kind of get dropped off at one. And then my grandpa would pick me back up at dark. And a lot of times I can remember shooting deer, Adam, I can remember shooting deer. And then going to walking through the woods to go get my grandpa out of his tree stand, tell him like, "Hey, I shot him. We gotta go." Like, I can remember, like I look back at like I probably ruined so many of their hunts because I was like, shot the first deer that came by me, and then I'm gonna go tell him because we need to go track, you know. But somewhere around 2010, 2011, I actually traveled out of state. I went down to the Southern Ohio, and I had been informed that a guy had told me that said, you know, if you ever want to shoot big bucks, that you basically have to leave Michigan. You got to go on other states. And I was, oh, okay, that kind of makes sense, because I haven't really seen a whole lot of big bucks in Michigan growing up. You know, I've seen 8 points and 9 points and the occasional 10, but they'd never really that big, but they had a lot of points. That was always the thing as a kid, is count the points, right? Like, he's got 8 points. Like, man, that's as good as gold. I mean, not to get too sidetracked, but like, I can remember my first 8-point deer I ever shot, you know, my grandpa put in the newspaper, the local newspaper. Like, it was on the sports page, you know, like that was a big deal. But someone, like I said, turned me on to, well, go out and see if you want to shoot bigger bucks. And I said, okay. And I had my first daughter in 2008. And that same year, I decided to go down to Southern Ohio. That was pre Onyx. That was pre map naps. And basically Google Earth, probably. That was about it. But I drove down there in the summertime with me and another guy, and we stopped at the gas station and bought a like county atlas book and kind of figured out, we're like, oh man, there's public land here, there's national forest here, like, well, we'll just come down here, hunt some more. And I look back at that hunt, man, and it's just like, you know, I went down there with probably like a $49, you know, big dog tree stand from Dunham's, which Dunham's is like a sporting goods store here in Michigan, and I ratchet strap like 4 or 5, you know, 5 foot sections of the climbing sticks, and I could tell it was hilly, but when I drove down there, I didn't realize how hilly it was down there. And I carried that shit all the way up on top of this ridge. And by the time I got up there, I said, well, I'm sitting here all week. I'm not carrying this stuff on here. It's a pile of junk. It's so heavy. I sat there all week. But I'll never forget, I seen one really big buck back then. Didn't shoot it. Not even close enough to shoot it. But left that trip going, holy cow, there's deer down in Ohio that are different. But then, so then the following fall, now my daughter's one, and now we're starting to toy the idea of buying a new house. And then I'm kind of realizing that, you know, this going out of state like that is probably not going to work again. But seeing that one deer down in Ohio kind of like tripped my trigger. I was like, man, I would love to be able to hunt a little bit bigger deer like that. And so I talked to my grandpa, you know, I'm like, grandpa, and like, I told him about this deer, and he says, well, he said, there's probably a deer like that around Michigan. I've seen them like that in my lifetime. I said, man, there isn't. I've never seen deer big like that in Michigan. My grandpa and I split money and we bought a trail camera. Okay.
Have you ever been overwhelmed by the hundreds of food plot seed mixes out there? Well, you are not alone. And Vitalize Seed has developed a seed program that takes the guesswork out of food plotting. Vitalize Seed has two core mixes, the Nitro Boost and Carbon Load, to keep it simple. Nitro Boost is their spring-summer food plot mix, and Carbon Load is the fall plot mix, each having a diverse mix of over a dozen different seed types that are highly attractive to whitetail. Food plotting made simple, but it gets even better. Each mix provides necessary nutrients to the soil, making for better plots each season and saving you money by needing less Roundup and less fertilizer each season. The 1-2 system simplifies your food plots just how nature intended. Vitalize Seed, make biology work for you. Order now at vitalizeseed.com.
And we put this trail camera out back, you know, they're running on D cell batteries, no idea what we're doing, just put it out there. And here's this buck. I'll never forget it. Never forget this deer. Here he is in velvet, sometime in August. I look back, it's probably like 115, 120 inch buck. But when I got that picture, I goes, everyone that's told me there's not a big deer in Michigan has lied to me. Because here one is, and I have the opportunity to hunt him. And from the minute, basically, someone told me that you can't kill big deer in Michigan, and then I got this picture, and then in my mind, I'm going, you know what? I can't go out of state like this. I got a newborn, get a new house. I got to figure out how to do this in Michigan. So in 2011, my entire thought changed of how to start hunting Michigan. I sold every tree stand I had, every ground blind. I got rid of everything, and I bought what I seen this guy using, and this guy comes from over by you, Adam. His name is Todd Pringitz. Okay. He came from White Knuckle. And I talked to him one time at a Lansing Deer Hunt show. And I asked him, what's it? I was watching his videos. And I, even though his circumstances were different than mine, because he was in Iowa and I was in Michigan, but I said, why do you carry that tree stand on your back like that all the time? If you remember back in those early days of White Knuckle, he always had a tree stand, always had sticks on his back. And he told me, he said, David, he says, if you don't like the results you're having, you got to keep moving. And I was like, whoa, wait a second, what's that mean? And him and I had this long conversation of what that meant. And that is why I sold everything I had. And I, at that time, it was the off season. I went and bought a tree stand from one you know, sporting goods store. And back then, I didn't have the money to go buy a 4-pack of sticks. I bought one Lone Wolf, the 36-inch sticks, about one at a time to land four in the off-season. But during that time, all of a sudden, I was starting to learn that people were, you know, like, they were doing this thing in the off-season. Like, they were walking around looking for deer signs. Well, I got to start doing that, too. And so I started scouting. And then I'm starting to go, the first time, and ironically enough, the first time I ever went out scouting in 2011, I found a shed in Michigan. Well, it happened to be a 5-point side. It almost scored 70 inches as a 5-point side. Still the biggest shed I ever found. You know, like, I look back, it's just pure luck that I found it, but I'm like, okay, they're, listen, everything anyone's ever told me has been a lie. One of them, I got a big deer on camera last year. I found a giant shed. Here's a guy telling me that says, hey, if you don't like the results you're having, just keep moving. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do. So that year, in the, you know, going from 2011 to 2012, I bought all that mobile hunting gear. And in that season, going into the 2012 season, I said, well, instead of one trail camera, I'm going to buy two. I buy two trail cameras and put them out. And now I'm learning a little bit more from the off season, putting the trail cameras off the food sources now. And in 2012, I made a pledge kind of to myself that I will never hunt the same tree twice. Now, that's not exactly what I would do today, but in 2012, that's what I told myself. And in 2012, I, doing that, on November 7th, I ended up killing, he's just shy of 140, a clean 10-point, heavy, long main beams, great brow tines, just didn't have the length. Like I said, just shy of 140. I killed him at 9 yards, and I was hooked, dude. I was like, this is it. This is how I'm going to hunt from now on. Anyone that tells me that there's no big deer in Michigan, I found one, I'm going to shoot one. I shot him. I killed him. It's on the wall today. But you know, the funny part was, the first guy that ever told me that there's no big deer in Michigan, that year when I killed that buck in 2012, he told me that you can only do that every 5 years. So you know what that did? Dude, that lit a fire under my ass and off I went to, you know, like, okay, I think I can prove him wrong again. He told me I can't find big bucks in Michigan. I did. He told me I can't kill a big buck, but once every 5 years, once I did it, I'm going to prove him wrong. And since then, that's just been what I'm doing, man. So yeah, in a long-winded way, you know, growing up from a hunting heritage, I really look back at those days that I think they helped me evolve being just, you know, a killer naturally, like, you know, having deer around me, being able to, you know, get the shots off, being able to control my emotions. And then about, you know, just over 10 years ago is when I made that switch to like, okay, I want to find that next caliber of animal in Michigan and, you know, hunt specific bucks per se, I guess you would say.
So I've got a lot more questions about that, and I love that, and that's kind of where I want to go with this, but I kind of want to walk it back just a little bit to the conversation that I walked in on when you said there's one hunt or a series of hunts that you look forward to more than any other hunt every single year, and so what is that?
And when I talk about being a kid, I think that, you know, the conversation that we were having up at TAC is that when I was a kid, when I would go out hunting, it was like I had tags in my pocket and I was like, there's a high probability I'm going to shoot something, right? Like that, there's a high chance. And today, my hunting style is I hunt very confidently. Like, I don't get to hunt often. My hunting days are really slimmed down now between a busy work life, a busy family life. Like, they're really slimmed down. So even though I hunt confidently, like I expect to be able to have an opportunity when I go out, I'm also realistic that these big bucks in Michigan, they just don't come often. The reality is I get one a year. That's reality. So when I was a kid though, boy, when I had a tag in my pocket, probably not much was safe, and that was fun. So one of the funnest things now, so I have two daughters, and both of them hunt. Both of them have been lucky enough to kill deer over the years. That when I take them girls out hunting, Adam, and I know that, like, if they see an animal, you know, they don't want to shoot a fawn. I leave it up to them. They, no matter what I think about a buck or doe or fawn, I leave those decisions up to those my daughters. That when we go out hunting, like I said, outside of fawns, something's probably going to die. And that is so fun. Like, that is so fun. You know, like, the same as, like, my grandpa, to this day, you know, the one I've talked about in the stories, he's, you know, he's early 80s and still to this day hunts. He's going to go out November 15th and 16th, and he's going to hunt all day until he gets his deer. And, like, those are exciting to me because, like, I know that there's a high chance my phone's going to go off if Grandpa shoots one. Or if I take my daughters to go out, good chance that an arrow is going to get released tonight. Are they going to miss? Don't know. Are we tracking? Don't know. We're going to find that out. But there's a high probability that we're going to have some action. And those are the funnest hunts. And I tell you what else I really enjoy. And this has been over the years. I've really learned to love this. I don't know about you, but man, here in southern Michigan, like, the snow seems to be hit or miss in December nowadays. And you give me a doe tag in December where, like, I've already killed my, you know, a good buck here in Michigan. And it's December and we got a couple inches of snow. And I know there's a high probability of, you know, we're gonna let an arrow rip tonight at a doe. Man, I freaking love those hunts, dude. I do, you know, but like I said, I'm realistic about the big buck thing. You know, I hunt confidently, but I'm also realistic that the opportunities, they just don't come that often here in Michigan.
What David was saying is, he said he gets so excited for his kids. He gets so excited for his grandpa, and, like, he wants him to shoot whatever just because he wants to share that experience. And he said he kind of, I'm paraphrasing, but he said something to the effect of, like, I wish we could have that every time. And it's mm-hmm. like, my rebuttal was, why can't you? And I think that one of the things we do on these podcasts is we talk to these big buck hunters, and we have these guys that go from, you know, that listen, and they take this information and they say, I'm going to go out and do that. I'm going to go out and learn it. But maybe they've never seen that 140. Maybe they've never killed a buck. And what we did last year with our Patreon hunt, and what I did the year before with, like, the kids, like my nieces and nephews and all of them, like, going out tracking, all that. Like, when you were explaining, like, when you were a little kid, counting your grandpa's arrows, like, watching it come back, like, to me, there's no better, I don't know, feeling if you haven't harvested anything. So you're back from the hunt, or you didn't get to go, or whatever. You show up to camp late, but there's still guys out there, and the hunt is never over until the last guy's back, you know. Yeah. And that, to me, is what it's all about. That, you know, I haven't killed a bunch of big bucks. I haven't made a name for myself as far as being a great bow hunter, but I think that that's where we, like I said at the beginning, like, where I've missed the mark is saying, well, I need to change up what I'm doing. And I've changed up what I'm doing, but I'm doing it, like, 85% the same way. And I'm not, like, really, really going hard and messing it up, you know, messing up some things to actually figure out what works and what doesn't. You go out and you think, well, I didn't see anything. There was nothing there. And, you know, as you found out, that's not true. And I mean, also, I didn't want to interrupt you, but what a great, like, story about Todd and, you know, getting to talk with him. When we had him on the podcast and talked with him and talked to him in the ATA, you know, he used to hunt up where Frank hunted up, and he hunted with some of my friends' family up there, and so they're on the white knuckle staff and all that stuff. So he was like, no way, you know those guys. And what a small world. But honestly, like, what a great, you know, conversation to have with a guy like that, right?
Oh man, I'll tell you what, Adam, you know, it's, I don't, you know, I look at today's world, and I know a lot of guys look up to other guys, and they you know, kind of praise the ground they walk on, you know. But man, Todd is the single reason, Adam, that I ever got into mobile hunting. I mean, he truly is, because it's like, you know, you look back to, you know, like those early 2000s, you know, in my case, it was right around 2011, 2012. And it's like, you know, even the mobile hunting gear that's is leaps and bounds of where it was. But back then, like, there was one choice. There was, you know, the Lone Wolf Assault 2 with four sticks, you know, like the, but like Todd, like he had all that stuff dialed. Like I just felt like Todd was silencing his gear before anyone else was ever doing that. Like I just, and you know, he was so open about sharing it, you know, like you if anyone ever gets a chance, go on YouTube and look back at the white knuckle stuff from 7-8 years ago. Now, does it look like today's stuff? No, it doesn't. But this guy was literally mobile hunting years and years ahead of anyone else. You know what I mean? Like they were talking about it before it was kind of cool, kind of thing, you know. But I just, like I said, when he told me that simple line, if you don't like the success you're having, then you got to keep moving. And I was just like, I'm going to take that and run with it. I'm going to buy a tree stand and put it on my back, just like this guy is. And I don't know about you, Adam, but I talk about this with my buddies a lot. And there's just something about, like, when you talk to someone that's also from Michigan. And like I said, I know Todd moved to Iowa. His circumstances in Iowa are a lot different than mine in Michigan. But he grew up in Michigan. He knew what I felt. And he knew the circumstances I was dealing with. So when I talked to him, he took the time to talk to me about it, man. It struck a chord with me. I just ran with it, dude. I took that philosophy and I ran with it. That's all I did.
On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep sea adventures.
Coming to me.
He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
So, I want to take that and kind of fast forward, because I guess, you know, very selfishly, it's kind of where I'm at now. But when you're say that same scenario happens today and you get that buck that you want on trail camera. So I'll give you an example. There's a spot that I've hunted a handful of times. I found it. It sucks to get into. Like, there's, you know, one or two guys on my trail camera every year, but like the amount of people that are actually going out there, not very many, and the odds that they're going to be there the day that I am. But there's bucks there, and I know that they get pushed there. I know that they bed somewhere around there. I found a couple beds, but I haven't like completely dialed it in. But I've had cameras mm-hmm. there enough to know that there's bucks, and bucks that I would like to kill there. You know, they may be the David Riley, hey, it's got four on one side type bucks, like from that era. But it's like, hey, it's proof of concept. Like, I walked into this spot, I put a camera here, made a little mock scrape, it rained. 2 days later, I had three different bucks on that scrape, and they were all, you know, racked animals, right? So to me, that's saying, okay, now I know that there's a deer in that area. And in the past, what I would do is I would just be like, okay, neat. And I've talked about this, you know, long ago with a lot of times with trail cam guys. It's like, are you a trail cam enthusiast where you just like to get these night pictures, or are you using that information, and how are you using that information? So let's pretend that one of these bucks is, you know, one that you're like, oh, that's definitely a shooter. He's one that I want to kill. You just have the one camera in there. What are you doing next? Like, how are you making a plan for that spot, that area, that deer?
Okay, so let's break it down like this. This deer that shows up, is he a do I want to shoot him this year or the following year?
Oh, I think for me and for a lot of the listeners, you know, we're kind of in the same boat. So it's going to be like a deer that you're going to shoot this year. Like you went out there,
okay.
You've had deer there in the past that are like, oh, these are good bucks. You put a trail camera out there and boom, you've got shooters this year.
Okay. So I'm a big, really, really big believer in 3 to 4 day windows. And this would be my guess. If you were telling me this exact scenario, or if I'm putting myself in this exact scenario, I put that trail camera there for a reason. Okay. All my trail camera locations are pretty much pre-scouted. Like I'm not just going out in the summertime and just randomly picking 5 different locations and put them. Like these are all pre-scouted. So if my camera's already there, it's probably there for a reason. But if it's there, it's most likely already been there for 2 years. And why it's going to be there for that second year and even moving forward is if it's good enough the first year, I'll put it back the second year. But the first year, say, let's say the year before, I'm looking for a 3 to 4 day windows. Now, there may be 2 or 3 of those throughout the year. But when that trail camera is there, because I believe that sometime in that season, I'm going to find a 2 to 3 to 4 day window, and that is when I need to capitalize. Now, me personally, I have a big catalog of spots like that. So the key is for me with that buck right there is once he shows up and you have instant intel, let's just say it's a cell camera and he shows up and it's October 14th. In my opinion, for the 14th, 15th, and 16th, maybe even the 14th through 19th, maybe it could be a 5-day window, but you have a really, really short window right there that he can be killed in or around that area. But I'm going to let my scouting that I've done in the postseason tell me where I need to kill that animal. That's why that camera is also there for a reason, because my scouting has put that camera in that exact location. That's most of the time. Like if I have a buck show up on camera, I should have done my homework before that camera was even placed there. The camera's just telling me when he showed up, and I expect him to be there in a very short window time frame. Now, that like let's just say this is an SD card camera, and now you checked it, and this was 2 weeks ago. Well, guess what? You're 2 weeks behind at this point. But what you can do is catalog that information, catalog that time window. And even though it sucks that you're 2 weeks behind, it's probably not going to pay off. You can read the sign that's in there, put that in your back pocket, moving forward to that next season.
So that's kind of the scenario that I've got. I've had deer on this community scrape, and I went out to the community scrape this year, and it wasn't there. Like for whatever reason, I don't know what changed. Last year there were no acorns, so the deer moved differently in the area, but they were still there, this same area. So when I went out there to scout to put the camera out there, same as I did last year, the scrape wasn't opened up. There wasn't a bunch of deer travel, so I just found a land bridge where I knew that the deer were going to be moving, because I just wanted to make sure that there were still deer in the area that I wanted to kill. But what I'm saying is kind of like go back to that 2012 hunt, and you're on trail camera number 2, and you got this big buck, and you're like, you know, because I think that's more what guys are, or realistic scenario for a guy that's just learning or something like that. So do you just mail it in and say, well, I guess I'm just going to not kill anything this year and, you know, put out all these trail cameras, and next year is going to be my year?
Okay. So I want to hit on 2 things. We're going to hit on, let's hit on the 2012 buck, and then let's circle back to your scrapes. I guess I've got some questions, and I'd love to hit on that. So the 2012 buck that's hanging on my wall today, I actually did have him on camera in the summertime, and he's probably about half a mile, honestly, from where I killed him. Now, even back in 2012, that exact hunt is one of the reasons I'm such a 3 to 4 day window believer, is I had about a 4 day window to hunt. So I'm guessing it was probably like a Friday to Monday. No, because I killed on a Tuesday. So it's probably like Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday kind of thing. And in 2012, what happened is I seen him day 2 of my little 4 day like vacation window I could hunt. I seen him on day 2, moved in a little closer. I seen him on day 3, moved in even a little bit closer, moved in on day four, and then I killed him that day. But that trail, honestly, like, I look back at that trail cam picture, that was my trail camera, like, philosophy back then was just like a straight inventory kind of thing. Like, they weren't on scrapes, they were just a straight summer food source inventory kind of thing, you know. But you know, even let's take the trail camera away from it. For a guy that's kind of maybe just getting into mobile hunting, or even the guy that's been in on a while, guys, I'm telling you what, if you can get on a deer, let's say you have, like I said, 4 days off of work or home life or whatever, maybe you're on the road for 4 days. I mean, I think a lot of, you hear a lot of like Andy May stories, these 4 day hunts where it's like, man, you get on a deer like day one or two, boy, day three or four, like you're like, man, your odds are up because one, you've already seen him, you've located him. And as long as he's not a mile away in the rut, you have a damn good chance at this animal, you know. But the scrape that you just talked about, Adam, that you just went and checked, are you talking about you just went and checked it this summer?
Mm-hmm.
And the scrape was the scrape really active, or was it pretty dead last year? Because you said there was no acorns in there last year.
Last year it was, so I walked in there, I think like 3 years ago, and it was really active. And then it was mm-hmm. active all the way through the year. So then I went back out there, put a SD camera on there, went back and pulled it. And I was like, oh my God, this thing is wild. So the next year I went back like this time of year, put up a camera, scrape was still active, you know, licking branch, really, really active. Pictures on it all the way through. And like, there's 2-3 day windows that I know, like that area right there is like, from what you're saying, and some of that is like a little bit of like after dark, you know, so it wasn't like daylight pictures, but that area was super active, so you'd have to figure out where they were at. And so I went back in same time this year and nothing. I mean, not no tracks, no anything. And last year we had really bad gypsy moss up there, so there was no acorns, there was no anything happening up on that ridge. There was a scrape down a little bit further, in a saddle, but it kind of shifted. So when I went back out there to set the camera this year, there was nothing. So I just kind of made a loop and then found where the deer were moving. So I was just trying to get inventory of like what deer were out there. And then boom, I've got these bucks on there. So validating proof of concept, but it's different than what I had the last 2 years.
So let me ask you this. Without the acorns last year, does that make you excited for this year, or are you worried about this year?
No, I'm excited. I think that there's going to be acorns somewhere right there, and it's just a matter mm-hmm. of which of these pockets is going to have the acorns. But I was fully expecting to be like the first year that I went out there to check the camera, like did like a scout hunt in there. I mean, it was just raining down acorns. And it was, you know, it was what you would hope for, but different scenario last year, nothing. So I'm thinking this year there's got to be acorns somewhere around there.
So it, like, as much as going out there right now and not seeing that scrape being productive can be like a little down, and this is how I'd actually look at it, is you have historical data from a good acorn year, and you have historical data from a bad acorn year. And if it should produce this year, even though it may be dead right now, you may have to play the long game in there. Or like, let's just say you're in there right now, and if you're not trying to just get summer inventory, that would have been like a really good place for me to put a camera, because it's like, yeah, even though I know I'm not going to get pictures right now, I've got historical data of acorns. I got no acorns. If we're back on an acorn rotation, it may not be hot right now because they don't have a reason to be in here right now. But come velvet shed and acorn drop, this place may heat right back up, you know, because that's a tough part of like a scrape that's in, you know, like let's just say if it's a scrape that has to do with a soft mass food, in my opinion, that, you know, you're trying to, guys, we're trying to build historical data, but a lot of that historical data can be so driven upon the food in the area. The same as, like, think about this. If you went out scouting in, like, this last January and February, and there's no acorns in there last year, but you've seen old historic sign from years past in there, right? You would go, man, this at one time this place was torn up. Well, if you stop to think about it, and you go, well, there's oak trees here, and it's old, there's nothing fresh, so that means that there's probably no food in here last year, but the sign tells me it's 2 years old, so this upcoming year, it could be dynamite in there, where it's like, yeah, you gotta, you know, as much as that sign reads old in there, it's because of the food that's in there. And you got to use that moving forward. So that place could be, it could light right up, but it may not light right. That scrape might not take off until velvet shed, until those, you know, if they're red acorns or white, hopefully whites, but I'm guessing they're, here in Michigan, they're probably reds. That once they'll start dropping, then that scrape may, you know, that it may light up. And as much as we would love to have those pictures right now, got to play the long game. Got to play the long game right now because it may become a lot better September and October in there.
So then as you're glassing these fields and you're getting this inventory, say on new spots or spots that you haven't hunted, when you're trying to, you know, so let's say you're driving around, there's a spot that you wanted to check, you glass the field, big buck in there, right? What's your next step? You know there's okay. Public around.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do this, because I'm dealing with this exact scenario this last 3 days. Really good deer from Michigan. Really good deer. There is no public ground, so we're just dealing with private. But for the sake of the listeners, let's add in some public. Let's say the public's 2 miles away. Okay. First thing I'm doing is, you know, we're going to. One, I'm watching the deer when I locate them. I'm going to watch them till dark, or if it's in the morning, I'm going to watch them to wherever they go back in. Okay. I'm going to start driving. Right, this is what I like to do. I like to drive the next 2 to 3 to maybe sometimes 4 square miles. Cause here in Michigan, we get a lot of, like, most of our roads are broken by square miles. And a lot of times, when I find located deer, I may not be able to get permission per se on that exact square mile, but maybe I can get one on the adjoining square mile. So then what I'm going to do, and this is no bullshit. This is what I've been doing the last 2 days. I've been striking out pretty bad lately, but I'll go out there and knock on every door in that square mile. I don't care if you own 2 acres or if you own 200 acres. I just want to somehow get in the game of this deer, because if I can locate one in the summertime, the one thing I've learned about the swamp ground and the ag ground in Michigan, if I can locate one on this square mile, the next 2 to 3 square miles, I can still possibly be in the game. When I can usually find one, I can usually find 2. So what I'm doing is I'm going to watch that deer till it either goes back to bed or it gets dark. I'm going to try to track every bit of that. Then I'm going to go knock on all the doors, like I said. Anything that I can get permission on, I'm going to try. I don't care what size it is. But for instance, if there's public land 2 miles away, 3 miles away, I'm going to put that in the back of my mind too. I'm going to start correlating on the map of how close can I get to these deer. And, you know, the hope would be is to knock on someone's door and get permission. That seems to be getting harder and harder. There's no doubt about it. Especially, I've talked about this before. Man, since all the COVID stuff, and I get it. There are people's houses. I don't blame them one bit if they don't want to answer the door. But man, to just get someone to answer, used to be no's. Now I just can't get people to answer the door. And I don't know if they're just worried about talking to someone or whatever the case may be since COVID. But that really seems to be the case. But, let's just say I can't get permission on anything at all, and I'm going to go find a spot, hopefully find one good spot in public that I think maybe, just maybe, that deer, that's, if he's 2 miles away, if he works his way this year or that far, that maybe he'll come across. And the best case scenario for that situation would be is that when I found one, then I found a big bachelor group in the summertime, because if I can find four or five, I know they're going to disperse. And maybe one of them will work their way over there. But let's also play this situation. Maybe I do get permission. And it, right now, it's in the middle of July. I will go tear that whole place apart. Because if I can go find, let's just say, if I get permission on 80 acres, somewhere in that 80 acres is a good spot, in my opinion. Inside that good spot, it's my job to find that good spot in there. And then it's my job to find out when that spot is good. Hence, earlier in our conversation, that 3 to 4 day window. That's a catalog that I'm always continuously building. Bunch of spots and rotating through them as each window opens up across all of them. But that would be my situation. But unfortunately, the one that I'm talking about right now that's happening currently in my life, no public nearby, and boy, am I striking out. And it's a bummer because these are, this is a very, very nice group of bucks here in Michigan.
So where do you stand with that on that, I don't know if it's Dan Infoalter. I think Jake Bush probably has the most, I guess I would say laissez-faire attitude toward these bucks, by saying, well, let's just go find another one that's easier to kill or that wants to be killed. You know, so do you get fixated like that buck's, you know, buck of a lifetime, double drop time, you're doing everything you can to do it? Or at what point do you say, you know, maybe I need to go find one that I can kill a little bit easier?
So I've actually had two seasons I can think back at that both, you know, play into the exact scenario. You know, earlier we talked about 2012 when I killed my very first, you know, what I called, you know, really big buck here in Michigan. And then the 2013 season, you know, I found a deer in the summertime, and I'll be honest, I thought I, you know, since I killed one in 2012, and I thought I could just easily, you know, rinse and repeat exactly what I did, just to it was on a totally different piece of property. I was like, well, I'll just do the same thing. I'll just keep moving until I kill this thing. Well, little did I know that that deer actually died even before season started. One of my best friends found him after the season. I brought him out shed hunting, and we found him. So he's on the wall today, but I spent an entire season chasing deer that was never even alive. I look back at that over the last, 10, 12 years, it's the only season I haven't killed one. I look back and I always thought I wouldn't do that. Always thought I wouldn't ever do that again, chase this one particular buck. But then in 2021, I came across a deer that changed my mind, that I thought, okay, I'm going to do this again. But this time it was different because two things. One, I was keeping close tabs on this deer. Like I was, you know, getting those pictures, a lot of intel on this deer.
I'm Will Cooper, host of HuntStand's Make Your Mark podcast. For even more content, be sure to watch the original films from HuntStand Presents on the Waypoint TV channel every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern. Visit waypointtv.com to learn more.
Join Captain Justin Leake and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
I was close on his heels pretty much throughout the season. But the second part of that was there was another deer on the property that I would happily shoot. Now, he wasn't the caliber of the deer that I was after that I eventually killed, but there was another deer that I would be very happy with. So getting fixated on one particular deer is, you know, it's tough because in a way, I believe that those seasons can teach you the most. Like one particular deer, learning everything about him can teach you a lot. But it teaches you a lot about that one particular buck. Because all these bucks are such an individual animal. They have a lot of tendencies that are the same. But there's such an individual personality where it's like, yeah, you can learn a lot about one, but it doesn't mean it's going to be just like that with the other one. So I don't get too fixated on one particular animal most seasons. I like having a catalog. I mean, realistically, here in Michigan, I want 5 to 10 targets. Like, that's realistic, you know. And I like areas that I have more than one target in that area, or on that property, or on that piece of public land, or in that square mile. Like, that's what I really like to see going into a season.
So from that same scenario, and this is one thing that I find very interesting with some of the higher level guys, is what is your being a very busy guy, and, you know, prioritizing big bucks and family time, and you've got to work, all of these things. What is your berth? Like, so how far is a normal hunt for you, or how far is too far?
Well, in general, I keep things within a couple of counties of reach here in Michigan. That's usually the case. Naturally, I'm covering 5 counties at all times. My eyes are on 5 counties at all times. And it's a lot of times, you know, generally here in Michigan, like, I was talking to someone about this the other day, that it takes me about every 4 to 5 years to turn up a deer of 150 or bigger and be able to hunt him. Not just see him, but turn one up and be able to, like, yeah, I can hunt, I have permission on that property, or whether it's on public, or wherever the case may be. I'm trying to narrow those years down. I don't want 4 or 5. I like to start turning them up in 2 to 3. I've been working hard at that. But naturally, when I'm covering 5 counties, man, I mean, you kind of know how it is here in Michigan. It seems like I can go to 4 or 5 counties, and even though I may find one 3 counties away, I may have one, you know, 1 county away that's kind of the same size, you know. So naturally, man, I'd like to keep it within an hour. That's kind of realistic for me. And also, that keeps it realistic for scouting too, because if I'm going to go 2 counties away to scout, I need a day. And most of the time, like, if I hear people ask me, and they say, man, you seem to scout a lot. I do, but my windows are short. 2 to 3 to 4 hour windows is what I'm getting. So my whitetail hunting is the same. You know, like, you know, say if my daughter's, no, I have to take them out to dance class, you know, a county away. Well, it's to my benefit to go find land in that county where I can go be a dad, do my responsibilities, and try to be able to hunt too. Like, that's, so it's, there is no, like, a hard, you know, like, say, drive time window on it. But if I had to give a reasonable time window, it'd be within an hour. I try to keep it.
So if you were going to give guys that were already down this mobile hunting path but haven't had the success that they wanted on, let's say, 3-year-old deer, what would your advice to them be, and how would it differ from the way that you approach things or the way that you laid things out?
Well, I'll tell you, this is one thing I look back on. And that's such a great question, Adam. As I look back on this, and not that I regret it at all, but one of the biggest problems I found with myself, 2 things. One, I had FOMO so bad when I decided to start big buck hunting. And it put a bad taste in my family's mouth. I felt like I needed to be out there all the time, okay? Because I seen what everyone else was doing. Oh my God, I go scouting. I can't miss a day of hunting if I'm going to shoot a big buck, because in my mind, you know, the opportunities in Michigan, they only come once a year, so I cannot miss that. One, don't be like that. Do not have FOMO, okay? Like, sometimes less is more. But the other thing I regret is I thought I had to be like someone else back in the day. I thought I had to, you know, I don't want to step on anyone's toes right here, but I thought I had to hunt one individual bed. That's what I thought had to be done, you know, like, if I was on the hunting beast, I had to read everything that was on there, and I had to do everything that they said. Or if I was on Next Buck Outdoors, I had to do everything just like they said. Or you don't have to do that. You know, the same as listening to today's podcast. You know, you can listen to, you know, myself or yourself, but you don't have to be just like myself or Adam today. take some information that we talk about and apply it to your own situation. Okay. Your situation is not the same as my situation. The property on the north side of the road is different than the property on the south side of the road. Okay. So take this information that you hear, take it all, you know, you can take tidbits from every person, but apply it to your own situation. You know, whether it's scrape or the beds or the food or a staging area, whatever the case may be, apply it to your own situation. And at the end, you've got to trust your process. Because when you start second guessing what you're doing, you're going to start second guessing your hunting. You have to trust what you're doing. Because everything you do in the off season is going to depend, or not depend, but like everything you're doing during hunting season depends on what you did in the off season. You have to trust that. The minute you start second guessing that, then in my opinion, you start to hope hunt. And when you start to hope hunt, it's a bad situation to be in. You know, it's when you start second guessing yourself. So yeah, my big things that I would tell someone, these are lessons that I've learned the hard way, right? Like I always tell my kids, like, it's never a mistake if you learn from them. So I'm not going to call these mistakes, because I learned from these situations. You don't have to be someone else. You do not have to be just like someone else. You can take the information from them, apply it to your situation, and trust your process. Build a process that you start finding things that work and don't work. Because even things that don't work is still information. It's still intel. Even bad intel is still intel. You do those two things and keep going. And like Todd would say, if you don't like the success you're having, you got to keep moving. That's what I would say.
So if you had very limited time, which somewhat you do, and you can only hunt one thing, so you can hunt early season food, scrapes, rut, or late season food, and you had a 4-day window with, you know, limited intel, or I guess with all of the intel that you have, where is your best opportunities there?
Okay. I've killed a lot of bucks from the 6th to the 8th of November. I've killed a lot. Okay. And these are all everything I'm talking about today is going to be Michigan. Okay. I've killed a lot of bucks in that time frame. And ironically enough, I don't know why, but all the bucks, all the mature bucks I've ever killed in Michigan, they've all been solo. They've never had another deer with them. But the more I've studied mature bucks in Michigan, the more I've tracked them, the more I've studied trail camera information, the more I've scouted. If I had to pick a window now, Adam, okay, if I want to kill the biggest buck in a square mile in one of these counties that I'm hunting, you give me October 14th through 19th on the best scrape outside of some of the best bedding area in a square mile. I have some particular in mind. You give me that time frame, the first doe is going to come through there. She will pull the biggest buck out of that square mile, the best bedding. She's going to pull him out of there. They will both walk through the scrape. I've got the information to prove it, all on video for years now. I get it. October 14th through 19th is not a popular answer. I don't know if anyone would pick it, but I've got spots that will prove the biggest deer, some of the biggest deer in these counties, October 14th through 19th, buddy. If you want to kill something, you know, 4.5 or older in Michigan, that's a deadly, deadly time if you have the right scrape outside of the right bedding area.
Well, that's great, because your first answer there, I was going to say, well, everybody is in the woods those days, whether it's, mm-hmm. I mean, and a lot of times I've got some really big bucks on camera. My wife's birthday is November 8th, so I'm usually okay. Either out of state or like at breakfast, and I'll get a cell cam picture of like just 2 years in a row, just right down the road from the house on a little 5-acre piece of private that I can hunt. I've only seen, you know, a handful of deer there, but on her birthday, two different times, I've seen just a monster. I mean, we're talking like a very massive, like 8 or 10, like I couldn't score a deer, but you know, it's an old massive deer, and 2 years in a row. Yeah. And I was like sitting there at breakfast, like, happy birthday, honey, I'm home.
Adam, just out of curiosity, what's the biggest deer you've ever seen in Michigan?
So hunting or glassing?
Just the biggest buck you've ever seen in Michigan. Either or.
I saw one that was 40s, 50s last year, opening day.
Nice. Yeah. So do you, like, you see him while you're hunting?
Mm-hmm. I think the next day he may have jumped over my shoulder, as a matter of fact.
What?
So I was hunting on the ground at this spot where there's ag that you can't hunt, and it was up against, if you remember this past year, there's a big east wind. So it was weird. Mm-hmm. I had to set up in this CRP, and I set up for this buck movement, and I had bucks walking in on me. I had deer walking in on me, but a couple of different bucks walk in on me in the dark, in the fog, all that stuff. And then as soon as it got first light, this 40s, 50s buck walked right out of that ditch and walked 90 yards out in that bean field. I mean, perfectly parallel to me. I could see him through the binoculars. I could see him plain as day. And I saw 11 bucks that morning. I messed up on three 115 to 120 bucks. The next day, I moved to where most of those deer went through, which was right at this one bush, which is where I picked up on that buck. Well, the wind was still out of, it was out of the southeast, so it was good for that spot where I was at. I got as close as I could. I should have actually walked in through the bean field, because two of those 115, 120s got my scent. They were about 40, 50 yards away. They got my ground scent, and they turned and took off later in the day. But anyways, it was super windy, and I had deer walk right up to me and then spook out, and I heard some crunching around behind me and all this stuff. And then as soon as the wind shifted from east back, it actually swirled and went back from the north, a deer jumped through the bush that I was in. And that's exact. I mean, there's a big bed right behind it, and that's right. But I didn't know that at the time. I just walked in there, and I think that buck walked through the ditch, or whatever that deer was, walked through the ditch and was going to get in his bed. And then as soon as the wind switched, he was like, oh my God, and jumped basically over my shoulder.
Holy shit.
It was wild. So, I mean, I like to think it was the same deer, but that, I mean, it was a big buck. And then glassing on that same like piece of property, there's bigger ones. There was a guy that claimed to have like a 160, 165 on camera. I can send you a picture of one. So the first year I ever hunted that property, it was a thing that like sold me on, like, we always hunted mobile, but it was like hunting like the wind scenarios. So my plan was to walk in this cornfield in the edge of this corn and get to this little middle woodlot. And that
in wild country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment. One of the most legendary shows in the outdoors is on Waypoint TV. Don't miss Primo's Truth About Hunting, Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
I got in there where I had a climber, and I couldn't get in any of the trees. I could have hunted out of a tree that was probably, I would have been able to be like 8 feet off the ground on this ridge. Obviously, hindsight, I should have. And I walked out like two more steps, and that deer was bedded on that ridge about 60 yards from me, and got up and took off. And he was like 130s, like mid 130s. The next year, I killed this little buck right here in the UP on the same day as my brothers. Came home for my wife's birthday. I killed that deer November 7th. Came home for my wife's birthday. She had it all set up so that I could hunt. All my stuff was still in the trailer. So I drove around and I saw a very similar buck to that one the next year. And he was out on his feet at about 11 o'clock, and I didn't have any of my stuff or anything like that. Fast forward, a kid killed him Thanksgiving Day with a bow just stalking in a ditch, and I got a picture of it, and it's like 160-something. So, I mean, yeah. So there's big deer right there. But so And I killed a 150. Green scored 150, so I don't know what he ends up. He's big, but down in Ohio.
Nice, dude. Nice.
So
yeah, they just don't come every day in Michigan like that, man. They just don't.
Yeah, I mean, and I completely get like where these deer feel safe and like ag and other things that give these deer like comfort. They have the genetics, they have the food. It's pretty wild to see. And so like that property that I was hunting with all those big bucks, like I killed this one and one that's probably this one's dad, like from the year before. Maybe 2 years before. Yeah, I killed the other one in 18. I killed this one in 2020, and they're almost identical, but that was maybe 5 miles from where we're seeing all those big ones. So,
oh, sure. So, yeah. I've been able to document, you know, with my own trail cameras, back in 2019, I documented one buck that traveled about straight line 3.5 miles. So 5 miles isn't out of the question, man. I think some of, you know, everyone's such an individual, right? Some of them have such small areas. Sometimes I think that they travel a lot farther than what we think they do.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll have to send you some. I've got a video of one and you can score them, but I thought it was an area that I couldn't hunt. And I was just driving around to see, this was a December something. And, I drove past and there was a buck bedded down.
Yeah.
And it was so big that I thought it was like a DNR. It was 20 yards off the road, just bedded, looking at the road. And it was so big, I thought it was like a DNR thing. Like, it was like, there's
like
no
a,
way.
Like a fake yeah. gear, like they were trying to get.
So I backed up and took some video with my phone. And then there was one that was like probably a year younger, like one class lower, that stood up right next to it. And then 16 deer stood up right there and took off. And it was like, oh my God. I think there was like 3 bucks. Oh. The one was, I don't know. I'm not good at scoring deer. That's going to be a problem, you know, when I go to Kansas, like trying to figure out like what to shoot. But it sounds like everybody's just, you know, shoot whatever makes you happy. And that's definitely, but I really don't want to not shoot a deer because I was waiting for, you know, something that wasn't there, something that I hadn't seen yet, something like that, you know?
Yeah, for sure, man. It seems like a lot of us Michigan guys are really good scoring them up to like 130, 140. Then after that, it's like, hell, I don't know. He just looks big.
Well, like when I go to Ohio, it's like Pope and Young is like what I'm looking for. And, the one I saw last year was huge, in the dark, 15 yards thrash and everything. And, I thought I was going to kill him the next night. I 100% thought that he was dead, that he was going to do the exact same thing. And, had coyotes come in on me right at the last second. And
yeah. But I tell you, man, that's the wild thing about this game is that, you know, we can sit here, we can do all, talk about all the scouting we did in the off season. We can be so good at running trail cameras. Our glassing can be on point. But this is a game that you can pour everything you have into it, and it's still not pay out in the end because of a pack of coyotes, because of the neighbor, because of, you know, who knows, a squirrel, the wind shifts. Like, this is a game that, like, you can truly pour everything you have into it. It's going to up your odds, but it doesn't guarantee anything. That's the wild part of it.
Well, and I've been hunting like trail cameras, like kind of like pattern deer, and, you know, thinking that I'm doing everything right. And then I talk to somebody that's hunting the same area and they're like, oh, did you hear that deer got killed? Or did you hear that deer got hit by a car? Or two deer got hit, like, I think 3 years ago, two deer got hit by a car, like right at the road where I was hunting. So it's like,
yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. You go down to Ohio every year?
No, we went for a few years, like 13 or 14. I think we went 13, 14, 15, 16. And then I don't think we went 17 went elk hunting in 18, and then I think the next time we went to Ohio was last year. Yeah.
Nice. Cool, so, man. I like it.
But I've hunted, I think in the meantime there, I hunted Missouri, and I elk hunted Colorado, and then Idaho also. So I've, in the mix there, I hunted Colorado twice and Idaho for elk. So
nice, man. A couple states out there then.
Yeah. And when we were out there, I could have, I absolutely hate that by saying like, oh, I could have shot this deer. But I stalked in on like a nice 100-inch or basket rack 8-point. And it was like totally, it was like exactly a total archery challenge shot. Super windy. And it was the last day. I got to like 35 yards and he was bedded like with branches in front of him and all this stuff. And I was trying to get to 20. And I got, like I said, I got to like 32 yards and he got up and John was super pissed because he's like, oh, it's just that's a total archery challenge shot. Super easy. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those things where we had walked over 100 miles at that point. We were 7 miles from the truck and I was going to shoot this thing. And then if anything went wrong, it was the last day we were leaving in the morning, like driving the 34 hours home from Idaho. Ooh. So the last thing I wanted to do was shoot this thing poorly 7 miles from the truck and have it run away from the truck and then have to go in there. But that was the first time out west, and that really opened my eyes to actual like public land hunting, about like how small stuff is around here. Because I'd look at the map mm-hmm. out there and like this much was 2 miles, 3 miles, 4 miles. And so scouting around here, like, oh, I want to go check this out. And this much is 700 yards or something. It's mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, well I can certainly go over there now, you know?
Yeah. Like we talked about, like everything in Michigan's broke up in like square miles, honestly. Like as much as, you know, you hear guys talk about like, oh, you gotta outwalk someone or this and that. It's like, at least in southern Michigan, there's nowhere to outwalk anyone. You know what I mean? There's none of that. But you know, I'd tell you, Adam, speaking of a total archery challenge, man, I do want to thank you for you guys. I had never been to total archery challenge until last year. So the 2022 TAC event, and what you guys, you know, the barbecue cookout afterwards party that you guys put on, man, it got me absolutely hooked to keep going up the TAC, man, because it's, the shooting's fun, but the camaraderie is even better. I brought my brother-in-law up from Colorado this year. He flew in for it. I'm like, dude, the shooting's fun, but like hanging out afterwards, I knew that you guys put on the barbecue and whatnot, where I was like, that, you got to check it all out. I appreciate that you guys do that.
Well, I think it's just for us, like, it's an opportunity to, you know, see our friends and see our friends that we've never met, you know, that sort of thing. And just, mm-hmm. just kind of showcase what Michigan has to offer as far as like the hunting community. And, you know, granted you can't have a closed door policy for that, but there's very rarely, you know, any animosity or anything. Everybody's there talking about bows, talking about hunting, talking about trips, talking about deer tactics. And it just doesn't really get any better than that. So it's almost like a deer camp in June, right?
No, I totally agree with that. And you nailed it too. It's like, you don't get to see these guys all the time, you know? So it's a lot of like, right around TAC is, we're all kind of ramping up for the velvet season in Michigan, and we're just getting off of scouting season. And even though we all kind of know each other through, say, social media, it's still like, well, tell me about your story from last fall. Or you gotta love it. I mean, it's one of the few events that, you know, like even like hunting shows and stuff are cool, but TAC just, it's just different, man. Last year was the first year I've ever went, so I've been to two now, and I regret that I ever missed any of them back, like, you know, when they were at Boyne and those days back. But now that my brother-in-law came off this one, now he's on my, you know, on my ass about going off to Colorado. Since he lives out there, he's like, well, let's go to that event. I was like, well, that's a whole different monster out there, bud.
Right. So what do you got coming up for this season?
right now, you know, I don't think I got too much going on for September outside of the youth hunt. Both of my daughters, like I said, hunt. I don't know if my oldest daughter will hunt. Bringing up that actually makes me think about something we were talking about earlier in the conversation about the whole tracking thing, that my oldest daughter now, you know, she's killed some deer. But I tell you what, she's so busy nowadays, but she loves tracking, dude. And whenever an opportunity comes up to go track a deer, like, that girl wants to be in the front. Like, she just loves it. So even me talking about the stories about when I was a kid, I still see that in her today. Even though she may not love hunting as much, she loves tracking. But my youngest daughter, Bailey, so she's killed bucks the last 2 years. She naturally has set a goal for herself. Her first year, she killed a spike in velvet, which was really cool. And then last year, she killed a 6-point. So she wants to try to keep up in the point category. So we'll do that in September. Always make it a goal to kill a buck in October in Michigan. That's always high on my list, especially open week. But then Kansas in November, and outside of that, man, that's on the docket this year. But, you know, even though I say that's all, I'm good with it, because, you know, usually for me, I'm always so happy to kill that one big buck in Michigan, and my family allows me to put a lot of time into it in the off season. That when I do kill that big, you know, usually when I do kill that real nice deer in Michigan, I don't put a lot of like emphasis on killing that, using that second buck tag. I just never naturally have. Maybe this year I will, but probably not. Not with the hopes of putting one down in Michigan and then leaving for Kansas in November.
So, usually ask, what's the bow setup, everything that you're using, but I would like to also caveat that with, do you remember from those back old days, like what your grandpa was shooting?
Yeah, dude, I still have the bow today. It's an old XI. You know what the old XI bows are? Yeah, I got it sitting back here in the storage room. It's an old XI, you know, the old Easton, you know, aluminum arrows, like the XX, I don't know, what were they, 75s, or always the Thunderhead broadheads. That was always a setup. But I actually know my very first bow was it was all black. It was a Pearson bow. I was a youth bow. And not that I'm mad about it, but, you know, I was taught a lesson back in the day that when I outgrew that bow to get a new bow, my grandpa had me take that into the local archery shop and trade it in to get money to get a new bow. I really wish I was able to keep that bow. I really freaking wish I still had that. But I also, you know, I also understood the lesson learned there, that it meant, like, you go trade it in, you can get $150, and you take the $150 and put it towards the new bow. It's always been the concept, you know. So that was always kind of what it was like. But yeah, my very first bow was a Pearson. It was all black, you know, a youth bow. Man, then from there, I took over grandpa's old bow, and it was an XI, and the cams on it seem like they're about the size of a quarter, it looks like. But I still have it to this day. You know, I remember it's got the old felt on the by the arrow rest, and just a giant grip on it, you know, but hunted and killed a lot of stuff with that. And then from there, I went to a Bowtech, and that was one of the Bowtech, back when they did the, I don't know if it was like the Patriot line, where they kind of, you know, the 82nd Airborne line, they went into all that.
Yeah.
And I had one, I think it was the Patriot, maybe, back in there. And then from there, I went to the Elite Synergy. Really liked that bow. The Elite Synergy was a great bow. And then now from the Synergy, I went to the Matthews VXR. And now I'm shooting a Prime Rev X2, which I really like that bow a lot. That's a really, really good bow.
And then what are you shooting for? Sight, rest, arrow setup?
Yep. So the rest, I got a Hamsky. I got a Hybrid Hunter Pro on there. The arrows, I got the Method Archery, the ZMRs, I shoot the 350s. They're a little bit on the lighter end. It's about 420 grains, but it's kind of happy medium for me. I really like them. And I do shoot the Helix FJ4 broadheads, a fixed blade. If I was to shoot an expandable, I've shot the Sever, the 1.5 is a little bit smaller one. And then it's got the ABB strings on it. And then I've been toying around with the Garmin, the XI Pro sight. I've been toying around with that. In the past, I've shot the HHA Tetra sight on there, single. I've always been a single pin guy. I can't mess around with a bunch of sights in my, you know, like the sight house. Like my eyes just don't, they don't work that way.
Sure. So, yep. If people want to follow along with you, or they got questions, or they just want to reach out with you and say, "Hey, man, I know what the XI is. I had one of those too." Or was it the Pearson? Was it the Pearson spoiler? We had a bunch of those laying around.
Was that what it was?
that wasn't a youth bow, but that's what. So Ernie used a Pearson spoiler forever. Then it got passed down to Chris. Chris killed his first two deer with it. And Chris has never had he did have one new bow, but he just shoots hand-me-down stuff. So,
I should reach out to my old, you know, because the guy that I bought it from here at the Low Pine Tree Shop, they still own it, man. And hell, I tell you what, Adam, I even have, you know, the arm guard that, you know, like you put on your jackets to keep the jacket down. And when I first started learning to shoot, my grandpa made me learn with fingers. So I still actually have a youth finger, like a three-finger tab thing that I learned to shoot with, you know, that eventually learned to, you know, use a release years later. But even then, that release I look at now, it looks like a freaking handgun almost, you know what I mean, or the way it looks, you know. But yeah, if anyone wants to reach out to me, it's you know, mainly on Instagram. I don't do much on Facebook. It's D Riley Jr. That's my Instagram. And then I also co-host over on the Fall Podcast. You can find us over there. But that's about it, man. Even on my social media, you know, you'll find some hunting stuff there, but it's also family, because, you know, for me, family's always first, and, you know, bull hunting second. But it's just a mixture of kind of what my life looks like, but pretty real, nothing fake, man.
Well, man, I really appreciate you coming on here and kind of, you know, talking to us about the scouting stuff, but like the history and like kind of like what hunting means to you is really what I wanted to get out of that. And I think that is tremendous. So thank you very much.
Yeah, man, you bet. It's I had a good time on here, man. It's brought up some old memories, and even, you know, even as much as I absolutely love chasing individual big bucks here in Michigan. You know, this September, I cannot wait for that first buck that walks out. My daughter shoots it. I can't wait for my grandpa to call me on November 15th. Do not care one bit what he shoots. Zero care what he shoots. All I care is about when he calls me, we're going tracking, and his smile. I mean, you're talking early 80s. He's still out there doing it. That's why, like, I don't care one bit what someone shoots. You want help tracking? Let me know, because I will celebrate with anyone.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again.
Thanks, Adam.
Everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills, or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today, and start making your mark in the great outdoors. I'm Will Cooper, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. If you haven't already, download the free Waypoint TV app to listen to our podcast and watch the original films from Hunt Stand Presents anywhere, anytime, and on any device.